Hello, Miner fans. Welcome once again, and thanks for listening to another edition of the Picks Up Podcast, exploring the sports stories, issues, and personalities associated with UTEP Athletics. I'm John Teicher. Hopefully all continues to be well with you and your family, thanks to all of our healthcare professionals, first responders, and to all on the front line whose efforts are so significant and much appreciated. From 1992 through 2019, 28 seasons in all, Bernie Ricono, a former UTEP assistant coach, provided Miner fans with in-game analysis on the UTEP Football Radio Network during this most unusual time between seasons. And with all the chaos about, Bernie decided to step away from that role. Bernie, thank you for your friendship, for your humor, for your wisdom, and for all the times you saved me on air during those 28 autumns worth of Football Saturdays. Partner, I will miss you, the good times and the challenging times we had. 2020, though, represents a new season, a new decade, and a new voice in the UTEP football radio broadcast booth. A new voice maybe, but a familiar face and name to those that have followed UTEP football through the years. In 1989, the eldest son of the Perez family, Mike, made his way west to gain an education and play football at the University of Texas at El Paso. Mike redshirted that first season at UTEP, but became a fixture at quarterback for the Miners over the next four seasons, and he's called the Sun City home ever since. Mike Perez, only the third full-time football broadcast partner I've had in 40 seasons calling UTEP football play-by-play, is here to discuss his life in the Sun City and his new career. And Michael, thank you for the time and for allowing the gentle arm twisting to get you into the booth.
Absolutely, John. I was honored that you thought of me. And like I said before, I just hope that I can take what Bernie had done with you for so many years, is hopefully do some justice in that chair right next to you.
So what about that new career of yours, huh?
You know, it was fun. I had a good time on Saturday. My wife got on me a little bit about using a word I should have used, H-E-L-L. She doesn't want me to use that anymore. So I've got to be careful because I've got people listening. And she's like, you can't use that word. You got to use something else. Use heck or something else, but don't use that word. So it was funny, but I did have a great time. I think the Miners they got some weapons. They're improved. Looking forward to watching them this year.
We'll leave it to our wives to give us the most constructive criticism. Right?
Yeah, that's for sure. That's for sure. Yep.
The two of us had conversed about this possibility if it ever presented itself. Why was this a good time for you to take the leap?
Well, John, I know you know this, but maybe some of the listeners don't. I my daughter played college volleyball for a couple of years, and I followed her around watching her play. She played her first year at Incarnate Word down in San Antonio, and I'd go down there quite a bit and followed her on her travel schedule. And then I did it last year when she joined the UTEP team and followed her around and followed the team and went up to Montana to watch her play in a tournament there. So had a really good time. She's now into her studies and has given up playing volleyball. So it opened up the weekends for me to do something. And I know that when you approached me, it was just the right time. It was the right time in my life now to get on board and join you in calling the game. So it was almost perfect timing.
Well, we were going to talk about your family a little bit later, so let's do it now. Tell us about the Perez clan.
Well, I've been married for going on 22 years to my wife Kristen. She's fantastic, great. She's a military brat. They moved all over. Not only the U.S., but out in Germany and some other places. Her dad's a retired lieutenant colonel in the Army, and they live. Once they got to El Paso, he got out of the Army, they settled here. Mr. Erickson, Colonel Erickson, is a big UTEP fan, so he's been a fan for 40-some years. Met her at Austin High School when I was coaching there, and she's just the greatest thing that's probably ever happened to me in my life. And We have three beautiful kids. Emily, the oldest, graduated from El Paso High, was a volleyball player there, played at the next level. And my son, Seth, just graduated from El Paso High this past year and obviously had to deal with the COVID issues and kind of cut his golf season short, a little bit in his basketball season. So it was tough, but he's doing fine. And now he's a freshman at UTEP in the engineering program. And our youngest, Nathan, is a junior at El Paso High, plays basketball and golf as well. So looking forward, hopefully they can, I don't know what they're going to do as far as sports, but he's definitely enjoying his junior year. It is online, but maybe at some point they'll get to get back with his friends, which I know he misses dearly, seeing those boys and girls on a daily basis. But it is what it is. They're all great, super, super good kids, and, you know, they call El Paso home.
And Emily's studying to be a doctor?
Yeah, she's a biology chem major, and she's thought about being a physician for many, many years, and she definitely has the brain to follow it. She loves chemistry, loves biology, so hopefully she stays on the right path and continues on and gets into medical school and chases her dreams of becoming a physician one day. That'd be really nice.
How come you didn't like all those things?
Yeah, it was when I chose kinesiology, I wasn't very good at math and just chose something that I knew that would, you know, kind of get me a degree in something that I wanted to do, which was coaching, which is something I did for a short time. And then, obviously still love the game, still follow it. But I do miss the football part of it from time to time.
So other than your choice of words, how did you feel about your first performance this Saturday?
You know, again, I was a bit nervous. I didn't know what to expect. I think as we moved on, I kind of started getting, and it did exactly what you told me, that I would start getting the feel for it. I kind of felt when I could interject and kind of give my thoughts. And try not to interrupt the play-by-play that you were doing, but it started flowing really well. I had a lot of people listening throughout Texas and some friends outside of Texas, and got a lot of favorable reviews. So I thought it was better than what I expected. But I still have room to improve, obviously. But it was you made it really easy. I kind of can tell when to move in and out, and it wasn't any pressure. I kept asking, like, hey, what do you expect of me? So just keep adding your football knowledge. And then that's exactly what I did. So I think as we progress here, we're going to get a little bit better than what we did on that first night.
What did you find most challenging?
I think sometimes, remembering the players' names, John, I know you've done it for a long time, but rosters change every year. I don't know how you do it to remember the number and the names and the pronunciation, first and last names. I think that's pretty amazing to learn all, obviously the visiting team's always going to change. So that's, and I've just never been really good with names. Even when I meet people on the golf course or something that you get paired up with, you're there with an Edward and I forget their name about three or four times during the round. So it's tough, something I got to get better at, and I will.
Did anything surprise you?
No, I actually didn't. I was telling my wife, it was amazing to watch you and your prep and how you handle it. I know you've done it for a while, so it's second nature to you, but it's still pretty amazing to watch somebody at their craft when you've heard them before on the radio, but you've never seen it up hand. So that was probably the most, surprising part, is how prepared you are and how well you have everything written and taken care of as you go through it. So that was really impressive to watch.
Speaking of prep, how did you prepare for your debut?
I hadn't watched film in ages. Obviously, this is my coaching days, but I got back in and started watching film. And it was funny how when you haven't done it in so long, you kind of lose – kind of what you used to do when you were coaching, which is break down formations look at tendencies down in distances and things like that. So I hadn't done that in a while, and I was watching the game more as a spectator than as a coach. And I had to remember, like, okay, now you got to remember to look at down in distances. You got to look at tendencies, formations, and other things that are going on. So I finally did that. It took a couple of days to kind of, you know, break down what Stephen F. Austin was doing. And obviously I've been out to practice to watch the minors quite a bit. So I kind of knew their game plan. And I thought for sure we're going to be able to throw the ball a little bit more, because I think Hardison is very capable. And now that he's got some really good weapons, I think it's just going to bode well for us to be a little more, pass friendly in this offense. So I think the film part was really good. And I also had I read a lot on the opponents, what other websites thought of both teams. I studied UTEP's tendencies quite a bit, some of the statistics from last year, just to compare what we needed to improve on. So that was all, but it was fun. To me, reading stuff like that is fun. So it wasn't necessarily a challenge. It was fun to look at. So some of the things were surprising from last year.
Of course, going back to what you call film is actually pretty good video these days. Back in court, it was that old grainy dark stuff, wasn't it? That broke all the.
Right? You had a big remote control that you run back and forth and slow down. So yeah, you're right. It's no longer film. It's all video, and it is done so well and so neat and so easy. I mean, you could find, you know, whatever you want instead of having a stack of VHS tapes in there to pop in. Yeah, you're right. It's gotten a lot easier, and it's definitely changed from 20 some years ago. So you are correct.
What about viewing the game from the vantage point that you did above the field? And of course, having played the game yourself and having been down there and then, you know, kind of watching it as a fan, what was it like to just view the game from where we called it?
I think I shared this with you. So when we do go to the UTEP games, I usually sit up in section one or two, way at the top, away from everybody, and really just watch the game. That's what I like to do. And of course, my kids and my wife are like, how come we don't get closer? It's like, well, I like sitting up here. This is how I like to watch the game. So for me, it was kind of the same. It's just more in the middle of the field. I just get a better feel for the game when I'm watching it from a higher, you know, position or from the end zone. I love the end zone areas. When I go to the Sun Bowl, I usually stand in the back of the Sun Bowl game. I usually watch from the end zones because I can see the game a lot better. I've been used to, you know, obviously playing quarterback. That's the kind of look that you get. And also when we watch film in preparation for games, we used to watch the end zone copies a lot. So that was really, that's kind of where I watch the game and learn the game, and I'm comfortable with it. But I also like sitting up high. You can watch a lot more. You watch the secondary and the receivers do what they do. And it's just a good spot for me. I don't like to get too close because you get sidelines and the players that are on the sidelines, and sometimes you may lose a play here and there.
I'm sure when you watch a game, you watch it a heck of a lot differently than an average fan watches a game. When you're watching a live game, what are you looking for? What do you see?
Well, you know, being that I've played quarterback in college, so you're watching the movement of everything you used to see when you played. You know, if the corners or this, you know, the secondary is giving away whether in man or zone, what kind of front they're playing. And then I'm also watching the receivers get into formations. A lot of that could tell you what play we're going to run. When you see it on film enough, you learn just from tendencies that we have. Like I could tell a couple times when Stephen F. Austin ran that wide receiver screen, I knew it was coming because I'd seen film. They would motion a certain way and you could tell that it was coming. That's kind of what I look for. I look for the secondary movement to tell if it's man-to-man. And then from there, I like watching the play develop. I can tell pretty quick if it's a run or a pass, depending on the tackles. I always look at the tackles, offensive tackles. They'll give it away instantly, whether it's a run or a pass. Sometimes when they do run a draw or something, they may trick you a little bit. But for the most part, I can tell at the snap of the ball if it's a pass or a run instantly. So that's something I always find. I trick my boys when they were small. I used to be able to tell them, like, hey, they're going to run the ball right here. Well, how do you know? Of course, they now know. They now know the tricks. But that was something that I'd always like to do.
going back to your days as a player, when you broke the huddle and approached the line of scrimmage, what are the first things that you were looking for?
You know, so I played for David Lee, and in my first 3 years, he was our position coach, as long as the head coach. Man, he was really good. He had a five-step process of when you broke the huddle, your eyes went immediately on the play clock. It's the first thing you found to make sure you were okay. Second of all, depending on where we were going, you would count the number of players, make sure the field was set properly. In other words, you know, if we were balanced formation, meaning five and a half players on each side, that the defense had to be. So I always counted the players. And this happens in a matter of seconds. Clock, players, and then depending if it's a pass or throw, you're looking at your target to see where the weaker cornerback is, maybe the linebacker who can't drop as fast. We all knew that just by studying film during the week. So that's kind of what you're looking for. Numbers, yep, there's 45. He's the one that can't drop as far back as their strong side linebacker. So things like that, that's, you know, it just kind of ingrained with you when you do it so long. So that's kind of what, so it was the clock, count the players, and then you're definitely looking at your who you're reading, who you're looking at to pick on. That's kind of what it broke down to.
All right. Since we started the process, let's continue as we go back 30 years. Take us through the process that brought you from San Antonio to El Paso and to UTEP.
Yeah, it was funny. I had committed to a Southwest Conference school, and it was Rice, and I was all set to go, and you know, 3 hours from San Antonio. Had a buddy that was playing there from high school, a couple years older than I was, and he was my host when I was there, so had a good feel for that. And I came out here on my last trip. It was my last trip. He had five trips, and I had taken four and had one more. Came out here and met David Lee, and God, it just felt so right when I got here. I really gelled with the players. One of my good friends, he's still a good friend of mine, David San Diego, to pick me up at the airport and showed me around the city of El Paso, and it just felt right. And when I met with David Lee, I remember we're sitting up at the Sun Bowl on a Sunday before my flight. He said, you know, if you come here, not only are you going to love this place, but it's going to love you right back. And he was right. You know, he was exactly right. David Lee, he could sell ice and Eskimo. He's a heck of a recruiter. And I remember him telling me, he's like, if you tell me you're coming right now, we won't recruit another quarterback. You're going to be our guy, you know, for the next 4 or 5 years, whatever. And I said, you know what? I'm going to talk to my dad, and I'll give you an answer by tonight when I get home. So got home, talked to my parents, told them I was changing my mind. That was the hardest call I had to make, was to call Rice and tell them I had changed my mind. We didn't have cell phones or text, so everything was done, you know, by the phone. And so I did, and that's what happened. People always ask me, what do you think would have happened if you'd have gone to Rice? It's like, I don't know, but I'm sure glad I made the decision to come out here.
David turned that Southern charm on you, didn't he?
Huh? He sure did. He's a wonderful guy. We still stay in touch. I call him for his birthday. He'll call me for my birthday sometimes, and he was a great man. You know, good, had some really good advice, you know, after I left UTEP on life and what to look for and, how to go about, you know, into the workforce and every other thing. So he was really good to me. He still is. And I guess that's kind of why I almost felt like I could trust him from day one. And that's what sold me on him and the program out here in El Paso.
Just curiously, had you attended Rice, would you have made? Do you think you would have majored in kinesiology?
That I don't know. You know, I had looked at their business program when I was there, but I don't know. I don't know what I would have done, to be honest with you, because I didn't realize how much time football took in college. Back then, when we were playing, there was. I don't know that we had the limitations that they do now. I know we practiced a lot more. We lifted weights a lot more. And and you were sore a lot more because you got hit an awful lot more. But you know, I think they've done some really good things for the student athletes now with some of the restrictions. But I don't know. That's a good question. I've never thought about it, but I was kind of happy that I chose kinesiology to get into coaching because that's what I thought I really wanted to do. But as you know, when you start a family and kids cost a lot of money, so I had to find something else to do.
You come to UTEP, you redshirt that first season, which in those days, I think a lot of kids expected to do. Did you welcome redshirting? And what do you remember about that first year?
You know, I do. I remember I traveled most of the season. And I know there was times when Coach Sweet wanted to put me in the game and held back. But honestly, John, I don't know that I was ready that first year. You know, I could make some throws, but I think I was maybe 178 pounds at that time, which wasn't very big. So that redshirt year gave me a chance to, you know, I think I had it maybe 15 to 20 pounds that first year, which I needed. And it really helped me grow. I mean, as far as handling school, getting used to the speed of the game was what I thought phenomenal. I think most players, when you talk to them, the jump from high school to college is exceptional. It really is. It's a big jump. And I think, like I said, that's why I was so pleased to see Gavin just kind of take, it looked like he was really poised and that the game wasn't fast. It'll be a little bit faster this Saturday for him because that's a different type of ball club he's playing, but I think he's going to do well. But yeah, I think, redshirt was a really good thing for me, and I don't think there's anything wrong with people redshirting even now.
1990 was your redshirt freshman season. Howard Gasser was the starter, but wound up starting 8 times. How ready do you remember that you were to play, and which games do you remember the most from that year in particular?
Well, obviously, I remember the first one because we were playing BYU, and I might have been the first quarter Howard hurt his knee. And, you know, I was ready to back up Howard, and I was the placeholder for the extra points and field goal. So I was pretty ready, kind of had a better grasp of the offense, but nothing prepares you for that. I mean, to all of a sudden, you know, be thrust in a situation where you're now the guy. It was hard for me to believe. And you know, you're playing BYU, somebody you obviously had heard of many times. And, you know, I wouldn't say I was not ready, but it's tough to play a whole season when you're not truly prepared to be the starter. And that was probably my fault more because I should have been prepared because you are one play away from going in. So the mindset honestly got a little tiring towards the end of the year. It was like, oh God, here we go again. You know, one more. And I think Howard came back maybe at the 10th or 11th game and finished out the season. But it was a tough experience. But it was really good because I came in the next year focused and ready to go for my sophomore season. And I knew there was nothing I couldn't handle from there on.
What was it like to play before nearly 100,000 fans at Tennessee?
You know, I always tell that story that when you're down on the field and they start singing that Rocky Top song, the stadium moves. Stadium moves. You can feel it moving on the floor. You're like, what the heck's going on? So it was something else. I mean, I think when we played that team that year, I think they had something like 8 or 9, maybe even 10 first round draft picks, not NFL selections, first round draft picks on that team. And they were just amazingly talented. And it was an experience, an atmosphere. You know, I always tell people, so we played Pac-10 schools or Pac-12 schools. It was Pac-10 back then. We played the Big 12 schools. But every time we played an SEC school, I think we played 3 when I was here. Man, that's just a different speed, a different type of player. And it really is. You can tell. Anytime you play somebody like that, you're like, wow, this is something else. We played SEC. I think we played North Carolina and some other schools. But they were good. but not like the SEC schools. That's a different year, a totally different year.
When you come to college to play football as well as get your education, it's those kinds of games that you come to play. Again, that Tennessee game for you, and looking ahead to this current crop of Miners, this week's game at Texas, right?
Absolutely. I mean, that is exactly, you're right. I mean, that's what you want to do. You want to play the big schools. You want to see what it's all about. But they, they have talent at every position, and their backups are talented, and the backups of the backups are talented. It's the best of the best. So you get a good measure stick of where you're at and what you need to do to get to that speed. And sometimes you can, and sometimes those guys are just that much better that you just shake their hand like, hey, that's a heck of an athlete that I'm playing against up there. So it is. It's great. I loved every atmosphere that we were in. We played Arkansas. We played Tennessee. We played Arizona. We played North Carolina. That was a beautiful setting. I know you and I talked about it the other day, but man, that was really good. Mac Brown was the head coach there, and it was a beautiful atmosphere. So yeah, those games are very memorable, something you'll enjoy, and it'd be good to have a good game against a school like that. Absolutely.
1991, your sophomore season, and I had forgotten this. The Miners got off to a terrific start that year, 3-1-1 through the first five games, and then lost six games in a row, all of them by a touchdown or less. You remember that?
I think we all do. You know, I'm good friends with Ed Bunn, who was the punter on that team. He's an attorney here in town, and we frequently play golf with each other and have lunch with each other. And we go once a year down to San Antonio, and we play with Jason Gillespie, who was our field goal extra point kicker. He's a dentist down in San Antonio. So we all three play 2 days of golf every year. There's a media that we go to, and we talk about that season so much. It's unbelievable. We play Wyoming. We have a touchdown. I think it's maybe the fifth game of the year, 28-28. We score with about a minute 39 left. And we get a call for holding on a very questionable call. And it came back. We ended up tying Wyoming 28-28. That's up there in Laramie, which is a very tough place to play at that time. We come back home to play, I believe it's Colorado State, the homecoming game. And we got to get a punt off. There's maybe 58 seconds left or a minute, something like that. And, of course, they block our punt, return it for a touchdown, and we end up losing by 4 points, something like that. So we were so close in so many of those games. We lost to Utah 10-9, and I think we missed four field goals, a couple of them inside the 30-yard line. And we always give Gillespie a hard time, but he about that game. But he's a great friend. Yeah, we talk about that all the time. We lost so many games by a touchdown, a point, 2 points, 3 points. And the big one was BYU. We're playing BYU. It's a year after Detmer won the Heisman, and we're playing them up there. And I don't think we had beaten BYU since 1960-something in Provo. So we're up there. We're lined up for a field goal to win the game. It's 29-31, so we win by 1 point and we make it. And, of course, our field goal gets blocked by a guy that was like 6'9", coming in from the on the field goal block, and he got a fingertip on it. Ball fell short. We lost the game. But that very easily that year could have been, 8-4. Very easily could have been one of the better teams that El Paso had seen. And who knows where that goes from there, But that 91 was a very memorable season. We lost a lot of coaches the next year and had a drastic change on our defensive and offensive side. So it didn't go so well after that.
Statistically speaking, the best game of your career probably came that year. And I know you remember it well. You were named the WAC Player of the Week. You threw for 290 yards. The Miners win at Hawaii 41-24. Fun to play over there, wasn't it?
It was. As a kid, obviously, I had never been out of Texas. So for me to get on a plane and go out to Hawaii and enjoy the beautiful scenery and the water and the camaraderie with your team. But it was always a good place to play. I played out there three times, enjoyed every single time I was out there, and just had a really good feeling. There's those stadiums where you just feel comfortable. San Diego State was another place I always felt real comfortable playing. And it was always, I for whatever reason, John, I enjoyed the later starts better, I guess, because it messed with our 7 o'clock start that we played here. I hated the early games, didn't like those too well. But Hawaii just felt right. The stadium was nice. Even though we were 4 or 5 hours behind, I can't remember what it is. So you were playing like at midnight, probably because we stayed up late during the time. But a great place to play. I enjoyed that. I still remember that game like it was yesterday. So, yeah, I can definitely recall several things from that night.
Was that 91 season, would you say, your most enjoyable season at UTEP?
I think so. You know, we had some really good coaches. I mean, Kugler was on the staff. We lost him after that year. Charlie Bailey, if I'm correct on Sean, I can't remember, but I know Charlie Bailey left. Several other coaches left. It was a lot of fun. We had some, you know, Rob Sessage was my center that year. He's a good friend, still is. We lost some key linemen. So it was probably our best year football-wise, and I had a lot of good friends that were older and I respected. And not to say that 92 and 93 weren't any better, but it just, you know, the losing got really hard. It was hard to handle. And, you know, we had the whole transformation on the defensive side of the ball, and it just didn't fit real well with us, even though we love Coach Tolleson and some of the things he brought in, but it just wasn't the right fit. And then, of course, Charlie Bailey came back the last year, 93, and it just wasn't right at that point anymore.
1992 was your junior season. As you mentioned, a tough, tough year. The Miners win one game. You shared playing time with Sean Gray. What stood out that year?
Well, you know, then that was probably the most disappointing for me. David Lee sat there and promised me, and we've talked about this, so it's nothing new. He promised we would throw the ball 25, 30 times a game. And after that 91 season, when we were so close and I thought we were really about ready to make the jump, he came to me that spring and said, hey, we're going to change more to an option-oriented team because that's what me and the staff coach the best. That's what we know how to do. And back then, John, there was no transfer portal, and nobody really moved from school to school. And I thought about it. It's like, well, I mean, the only thing I can do is learn how to run the option a little bit better, which, you know, I was never the fastest, that's for sure. So I just kind of, it was like basically telling you you'd been demoted, even though you had done nothing wrong, but gotten better. And, you know, now we were going to run something different that you weren't as good as somebody else may have been. So it was kind of a demoralized a little bit, but like anything, I mean, I just took the challenge head on and was going to try to do the very best I could. And we went from there, but yeah, it was definitely something that, was tough. And I didn't like the whole sharing, quarterback bit. Nothing against Sean Gray. He was a great teammate, good friend. And, you know, did what he was brought here to do, which was run more of an option attack style of offense.
And then as a senior, you went one better. You, Sean, and Corey Tucker. That had to be a lot of fun, a three-man rotation.
Well, that it was even worse. That's what I said. It got to the point where it was almost, you know, we had a different quarterback coach. David Lee kind of stepped back from the quarterback position my junior year. We had a different quarterback coach, and I think he was new. It was the first time he'd ever coached quarterbacks, and you could kind of tell. Which is why I admire Coach Canales and those, you know, quarterbacks that coaches like that know what they're doing, because it's such a, you know, such an important position, and there's so many mechanical things that a quarterback has to do right with throwing motion and reads, that if you don't have somebody there that's not has done it before, has even played the position, I think it's really hard. It's really hard to do. So with that being said, yeah, having three guys playing one position, I don't think the team ever got a good feel for who the leader was. And you never really got comfortable kind of always looking over your shoulder thinking, well, I can't really, you know, take a shot. I got to dink and dunk everything to stay safe, to stay clean. So, you know, it's not a good way of doing it. And, you know, I had David kind of confided in me afterwards that if, you know, if he could go back and do anything wrong, he would have played me those last 2 years. And he said he probably would have still have his job. And I said, well, we can all say everything about, you know, what ifs and what happens, but that's just the way it is. And that's the way it was intended. And I wouldn't change anything about it. Obviously, I would have loved to play out my junior and senior year, because I thought that sophomore season had grown a lot and was going on to be a really solid quarterback. But it just didn't happen, and then that's okay.
I've always thought, Mike, that a lot of life lessons within the game of football for those that play it. Do you agree?
Oh, John, I can't tell you. I mean, you know, we started a medical waste disposal business here in town, and it's a lot like football. When you start off, you think everything's going to be great, and you get slapped around by certain things you have to do, and times get tough. Times get real tough. That's why you kind of rely back on your football days and how hard it was to wake up every morning and keep going. But you just do it, and ultimately you'll overcome. But I can't tell you how important this lesson that these kids are learning in every sport, from volleyball to basketball to track, to, because it's tough out there, and life is tough. It's not hunky-dory. It's not always going to be easy. Mom and dad aren't going to be around for, you know, to take care of you. So it's a good lesson in life that you just keep going. You know, I'll tell a quick story. We were, I took a job as a spine consultant for a company selling surgical equipment. And I had, you know, of course I had an anatomy class at UTEP. And the first day we go into a cadaveric lab at Stanford University, and they're like, okay, you're going to have to identify every single part of the spine, and you're going to have to know this by tomorrow. You'll have an exam. If you don't get a 90, you'll be fired and sent home. And you talk about pressure. I mean, that is pressure. But you found a way to get through it, because it's like pushing yourself during the spring when it's really hard, or during a hot two-a-day. And that's how I've always kind of gone about anytime there's something to be done that needs to get done. I just relate it back to football. And it makes it like I've done it before. I know I can do it again. So, yes, very good life lessons in college athletics and high school athletics. I think it's great for kids to participate in.
You may not be aware of this, but you're still ranked in the top 10 at UTEP for career passing yards and touchdowns. Does that surprise you?
It does, because it's been so long. And, you know, when Coach Price was here, they threw the ball quite a bit. So I kind of figured everybody, but then again, I think he only had two quarterbacks in Trevor and Jordan. So that was good. And, you know, I'm a big fan of the quarterback position. Obviously I was a big fan of John Rayburn. He's still a good friend of mine. We talk, I see Trevor in the OR from time to time. So I know him really well and talk to him quite a bit. Obviously my brother Rock, there's some other, you know, Leonard Lilja, still a good friend. I see him from time to time. So I've always been, you know, you respect the position once you've played it, and you hope that kids come in and do better than what you did. That's just how I've always been, because that means that the team is probably doing well. I hope Gavin breaks everybody's records, because then that'll mean the team's probably doing fairly well. So you always root for them, and the longer you're here, you know, you hope that you know that your records are going to go down the totem pole, because there's just that many, you know, kids vying for that spot and throwing so many yards that eventually you're going to keep tumbling down. But you look at like Billy Stevens, I see him at H&H Car Wash from time to time, and we talk, and he's still up there quite a bit. So it's nice to see that some of the older guys, I think Sammy Garza, who's a dear friend of mine, is still up there. So yeah, I keep tabs on it every now and then, and I'm surprised I'm still in the top 10, but it ain't going to take long, especially I think Gavin will kind of move there. If he stays healthy and continues to play, and he'll be up there, and probably, you know, a couple more quarterbacks in the near future.
You've talked a lot about your former teammates and about others who have played football both before and after you here at UTEP. And for me, you know, when people ask me, Mike, and I'll bet you agree. For me, you know, obviously I love the games and everything about football. But the thing for me is all the friendships and all the relationships that I've made connected to the game of football over these last 40 years. That's to me what makes this whole thing fun.
You know what's so special about sports in general, John, especially football and the whole huddle, that you come together as 25 strangers when you first get to UTEP, and you leave here with a brotherhood for life, regardless of race, color, economic situation. You know, it's like I think I may have told you a story. I haven't spoken to Pete Shufeldt probably in 15 years. I had a conversation with him about 2 weeks ago. Pete was a linebacker during our 90-91 season. We just picked off like no big deal. We talked for several hours, caught up on his kids and how he's doing. And there's things like that I think America needs more now than ever. We need to have that kind of camaraderie with people. And I think that's what's so great about sports. I have a brotherhood now with players that played with me. But I'm also good friends with the ones that Rocky played with. I know Lee Mays. We pick up the phone and talk, even though he was Rock's teammate and friend, through the connection of UTEP and cheering for him and all that, we became really good friends. I'm friends with Brian Natkin. He's another good friend. Kerry Clayton, Ariel Famuligi, I'll call him from time to time. Rick Fetty. I know all those kids really well. Paul Smith is a really good friend. So it just comes on as to, you know, it's so great that, and it teaches you that, you know, no matter where you come from, when you work together at a certain goal, it just builds a bond that's inseparable. That's exactly what it is.
It's kind of cliche, but it's truly a big family that you're a part of, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, there's UTEP people, and you'll be surprised when I tell people some of the football players, basketball players, even some of the track guys, golf guys that were here during my time have gone on to be very successful. And you root for them, you cheer them on, because we all have the same UTEP tie and we know kind of what we all went through. But it is a huge family. And you know, believe it or not, UTEP has some it's spread all throughout the country, and some very high profile people that are connected in some way, shape, or form to UTEP athletics.
You took advantage of your time here at UTEP by getting your degree in kinesiology. Was it your intention to remain in El Paso once you were done?
You know, I don't know that you ever have a plan when you're that young, John. It just so happened that it worked out for me. I love the city. You know, I'll always be from San Antonio because that was my hometown. But I love El Paso. I think what people miss here is that the people are so wonderful. And I mean that sincerely. When I was here, my first year was very, very tough. I couldn't get used to it. You know, football was tough and getting acclimated. But then I had some families that kind of you watched over me, gave me some good advice. You know, I had a good buddy of mine, Dr. Charlie Gutierrez, that was him and his family were so good to me for so many years, and watched my kids when they were little. I mean, there's just so many good families here that it's, you know, you just know that, why am I going to leave a situation like this? I can do whatever I want. The cost of living is great. And I can get on a plane and go vacation anywhere, but come back to El Paso. So I decided to stay here. I know that there's a lot of football players that have stayed here. Many people don't know that, but there are quite a few of us that do remain, some basketball players. But the ones that do stay just love it. I mean, you know, Ed Bunn's still here. Ross Sessage is still here. Al Gonzalez is still here. John Rayburn is still here. There's quite a few out there that remain and have done really well for themselves.
Yeah, I hear people all the time, former UTEP student athletes, and it absolutely amazes me that stayed here in El Paso once they've finished up. So, you know, obviously there's something to it, isn't there?
Yeah, it's a great city, and again, I mean, if you go to Houston, then you go to Dallas, there's the Cowboys, there's the Texans, there's the Astros, there's the Rockets, there's the Mavericks. Here, it's still UTEP. I mean, I know we have the Chihuahuas and the Locomotives and some other teams, but you're still UTEP. I mean, looky here. I mean, 30 years later, I'm still a UTEP quarterback that has some meaning. And then that's, you know, when you're young and 18, you don't even think about that. But there's something to it when you still belong to the city and they still remember you as the minor quarterback. I mean, that doesn't happen in a big city, and El Paso is a big city, and it's something that is really good. And I try to tell kids here, when you get here, you're going to be loved by the city forever, especially if you do well. So, and I think sometimes they're too young to understand that, as I was when I was 18, 19, and 20. So,
well, as the younger generation would say, that's pretty cool, isn't it? Pretty cool.
It is pretty cool. It's a great place, John. It really is.
Oh, no question. Post-graduation, Mike, you taught and then you coached for 3 years at Austin High School. What did you enjoy most about all of that?
You know, coaching the kids. I have players now that are grown men with families that still call me coach, even though it's been over 25 years. You know, I've got some players that are attorneys, business owners, CPAs, have gone on to different fields and they still call me coach, and you see it on Facebook and you see it out in the mall or at a restaurant. And that's the kind of stuff that you miss. I mean, you know, coaching in the high school levels is very rewarding in that fact that for you'll forever be an influence on somebody. And it's funny how I'll send out even simple birthday reminders to some of my former players, and man, they just love it. They'll reply right back. You know, hey, thanks, coach. Means a lot for you to send me a birthday announcement. So that's special, and that's irreplaceable. The relationship you build with young men that are you know, just looking for some type of guidance, and I think I was able to provide that for a lot of the kids there. I still talk to quite a few of them. I talked to Rufus Brown, who was probably the most, you know, notable player that played for me at Austin. We still talk on the phone, you know, every 6 or 7 months. He'll call and check in, and he's doing really well in Georgia. So it's actually he's in D.C. now, but he's doing fantastic. So that's the kind of stuff you miss. And I don't know. I tell my wife, I said, now that I've got a little more liberty to do things, I don't know what I'll get into next, but maybe I could go back and coach again at some level, because I truly enjoyed it. It was just wasn't the right time for me to continue. I had an offer that I couldn't turn down, and it worked out for me. We've done really well with the businesses that we've been in, and now it's time to probably do something that I truly love to do. And I don't know that it is coaching, but I sure like to be in sports and something that I can help kids and was it just advice and whatever else might come down at the pike at that point.
You found your way into pharmaceutical sales and then surgical spine sales, which you still dabble in. What drew you to that in particular?
It becomes, you know, once you're into, I was into the pharma world, and I used to sell a pharmaceutical drug, Celebrex, which is very popular. You know, I got to know a lot of the physicians around town, especially the surgeons who would use it, were familiar with the drug. And I got to know some of the spine guys, you know, Dr. Dean Smith, who's been in El Paso for a long time, David Massell, Greg Meisenheimer is another good friend that has been around for a long time, very well-known spine surgeon here in town. So, you know, there was a company called Kyphon that would sell balloons for compression fractures. Due to osteoporosis or some type of trauma. And they were a brand new company, one trick pony, which means they only had one product. And I asked the doctors that I knew about it, and they're like, you need to take that job. It's going to revolutionize how we treat those types of patients, and it's really good. And I think at the time I was rep 24, 25 in the company, and I lived on an airplane for about 5 or 6 years, John. It was tough on the family. But it was all worth it. It really paid off, and got into got into that and the OR, helping the surgeons with the cases, and got to know them really well. Then it's kind of just transitioned into other selling other products and stuff. And it's been a fun run. I've got some really good friendships that I've developed with not only primary care physicians, pain physicians, and also some of the surgeons. So we're blessed in El Paso to have a good, a good group watching over us. So that's really good.
In 2012, as you alluded to, you founded a medical waste company here in El Paso. Please share with us the story of how MediWaste Disposal came to be.
You know, it's just a funny story. I had a friend in Florida that had done something very similar, and he worked for Kyphon back. We got hired together. We went to training at the same time, and training was in Sunnyvale, California. So you got to spend a month with, six perfect strangers that you never met. So you kind of get close to them. And he left Kyphon 2 years after we left the training, and I landed in Tennessee covering at a convention, and I saw him there, and I was like, "Hey, what are you doing now?" And he started talking about, a medical waste company he had started in just outside of Jacksonville. And I was like, "Okay, well, tell me about it." He's like, "Well, the red bag waste, of course, when you're not in it, you never even pay attention to it. I'd been in the OR for all those years and had never even really paid attention to the red bag waste, where they dispose of all the stuff that's used in the OR. And when you see the doctor and he takes your temperature, he throws that stuff in the red bags or the red containers." So I started looking into it, and sure enough, there was definite market, a need for El Paso. And, we took a flyer, not knowing anything really about the industry itself. It was myself and Dr. Gus Martell, who was a good partner of mine, and another buddy of mine named Anthony Litch. And we just kind of grabbed the bull by the horns and figured it out and started it. And we grew it to a significant business. And, I think at the time we had no customers when we started, and we're at the point, I'm probably close to 1,000, John, I would think. Some point around there. So it was really good. We sold the company last year to an in-town investor, so it's still in town and it's doing really well. But yeah, you build it up from scratch and you watch your baby grow, and then you send it off to college and you leave it in somebody else's hands, kind of that feeling. But fantastic all the way through. It's, you learn so much when you do something from cradle to to adulthood. The learning process is tremendous, but invaluable as to what you learn from, fitting it into other things you do in your life.
Well, what a great success story. Mike, you touched on your brother, Rocky. We'd be remiss to talk about The Rock. He followed you here to UTEP and directed the minors, and no one will ever forget the school's only Western Athletic Conference football championship 20 years ago this fall. Can you believe that?
Wow, John!
Your little brother, years ago.
Huh? It seems like yesterday. It really does. I think I've told you this story before, but I remember that summer, or it might have been that spring, sometime in May. Me, Rock, and Brian Atkin were playing golf the summer before their senior season started, and they both looked at me and they said, "We're going to win the WAC this year." And I remember kind of chuckling, like, "Okay." Thinking to myself, like, these guys are really, wow. But what I didn't know is how tight that senior group was, and how the leadership that offensive line and Rock and Natkin and Trey Merkin and some of the other guys on that team had produced. I mean, they were really tight knit, and they were really a good group. And talented. I mean, they had a bunch of guys that played in the NFL. People seem to forget that, but there was a bunch of guys who played on that team in the NFL. And, I wouldn't say that I was shocked, but I was pleasantly surprised as they started playing, to see them getting better and better and better. And when they beat Rice and clinched a tie, I guess, that was just tremendous. It was, we still talk about it, and anytime we see Mays or Perry Clayton or Famuligia, one of those guys that was on the team, Trey Darcelet. Anytime we see those guys, we just talk about it. You're right, it just seems like just yesterday, but it's been 20 years this fall. That's just amazing.
What a fun season that was. What's the Rockman doing these days?
He's kind of followed me in. I got him on with a knee and hip company when he first got out of football. He tried to play arena ball for a year. He actually played for Coach Maynard down in Laredo. I know you mentioned him at the game the other day. He was there. He played for Scott Maynard down in Laredo, Texas. Played a year of arena football down there, and then he realized that he had to get to work, and we got him a job doing knees and hips with a local company here in town, and now he does spine. He's also in the spine industry, we help each other out, cover cases and stuff. So it's interesting. Rock and I have always gotten along really well. He's six and a half years younger than me, so by the time I left El Paso, he was still in junior high. So we didn't really, we missed a good part of our, growing up together, but boy, we've made up for it in these last 30 years. We're really super tight. We enjoy each other's company, and we still get competitive with each other, whether it's golf or a fantasy football, whatever it might be. We're always competitive with each other.
Now, he married up severely. He's married to Chris, an El Paso, yeah, and a former UTEP women's basketball student athlete. And boy, do they have talented children, don't they?
They do. I love Christy and her family. They're great people. The Mata family is fantastic. Mr. Mata, he's the main guy for that family. He's something else. He's a big Miner fan. And the reason I love him more than anything is because he always tells Rocky that I was the better quarterback, that Rocky just had a better team. So that makes me feel pretty good. But he did. Christy was a really good basketball player for Coach Rushing. And I think she might have played one year for Keith Green, but I'm not quite sure. But boy, their kids are talented. Little Rock, who's their oldest kid at 16, signed a professional contract to play with FC San Antonio at 15 years old. And he's had a really good career so far, and sky's the limit for that kid. He's being recruited by every major college, from Stanford to Duke to Wake Forest for soccer. But I think, I don't know what he's going to do. I don't know if he's going to choose that route, but he's got a real good chance of turning pro, probably next year or even the year after, 17 or 18. But then the other kids are just as athletic. He's got two boys and two daughters, and the younger ones are even scarier. They're following the same footsteps. It could be even better than what Rock is, and that's pretty scary because the kid's pretty talented.
So what does Rocky think of your new gig, huh?
So he was listening on Saturday, and he called with, of course, he said, oh, y'all did a great job, but, let me give you some pointers, as my brother always is known to do. So it was fun getting some critiques from Rocky, who thought it was that we called a good game. He just said that I sounded nervous in the beginning, which I was. I didn't, now that I know more or less what to expect, I think, like I told you earlier, I think we'll move along a little bit better. But that was it. He did give us two thumbs up, so that was really good.
So it's on to Austin in Saturday's matchup with Texas, the season opener for the Longhorns. What should we expect, do you think, on Saturday? And what are your expectations for the Miners for the rest of the season?
Well, you start Texas. They bring back a lot of people offensively, obviously. Sam Ehlinger, their quarterback, I think is phenomenal. I think he'll get drafted in the NFL. And then they've got some players – that I think one of their tackles is a first round draft pick, or will be. And I think one of their defensive backs, that Caleb Stern, is also one of the first round projections. So they've got some talent, John. They've got some really good running backs. They got, I'd like to see this freshman kid that was the top running back in the country from Arizona that came out to Texas. I'd like to see him run. So we're going to have our plate full. I mean, when you're playing talent like that, you know that you almost have to play a perfect game. But, you know, they put their underwear on one leg at a time, just like we do, just like the Miners do. We got to go out there, run the ball, you know, throw the ball like we did the other night, protect Gavin defensively. We've got to play well. We've got to control the clock as much as we can. No turnovers, which, you know, that'll kill any team against any competition. But when you take a step up in competition, you really got to be cognizant of turnovers, controlling the ball, putting yourself in favorable positions on first and second down to be able to convert third downs. And when we get in the red zone, we got to continue to score. I mean, we've done a really good job. We did a good job Saturday. We did a good job of it last year, even though we weren't in the red zone as much as we'd like last year. And just, you know, be ready to compete. I'd love to see us compete. I mean, you're going out there for that reason. So there's no, I don't want to see us lay a complete egg and just go out there and get totally embarrassed. I don't think they will. I think this team's tough. The Miner team is tough. I think defensively, we were pleasantly surprised at some of the things we saw from the transfers that we got in. So I expect it to be a competitive game. Obviously, we have to play a pretty perfect game and get some turnovers to go our way to have a chance to win up there. But you never know. That's why we play.
Well, this was fun, wasn't it? Huh?
It was. I enjoyed it. I didn't know it'd be that interesting to talk for an hour, but it was good, and we talked through a lot, that's for sure.
We sure did, and time goes quickly when you're having fun. Mike, thanks for doing it. Again, welcome to the UTEP Network radio broadcast booth, and let's go have some fun this Saturday in Austin. What do you say?
That sounds great, John. Looking forward to it. We'll see you on Saturday.
All right. And thank you for listening to the Picks Up Podcast, the UTEP Athletics production. Stay well, Picks Up, and go Miners. Let's talk again next time on another Picks Up Podcast.